So who remembers what we were hearing about yesterday? Can you open the window, please? I'm not going to call on you and ask you, because you'll tell me about green lizards and things. Who remembers what we were hearing about yesterday?
When Sati is requesting Lord Shiva to give permission for her to go to the sacrifice.
Go to the sacrifice. By her father, Laksha. Anything else?
I think that was the end point, was that Lord Shiva was going to give his side of the story away. He didn't want his wife to go.
Yeah.
And she had a strong desire to go there, to associate with her family and friends and show off her father's gifts of jewellery.
Yeah. So there was simple, innocent, childish, mundane reasons for wanting to go to basically a spiritual event of a sacrifice. Because by sacrifice, ultimately, it is Vishnu or Krishna, God, who's supposed to be pleased. So we are all like that too. When we go to our religious performances, our motivations aren't always just for Krishna's pleasure, but we want something out of it too. Whether it's something social, or something, or some wealth, or some curiosity, or some to remove the distress and the dread that is in our hearts, the fears, or dutifully we go because it's the right thing to do. Still, we want something based with ourselves as the center. And this is always good, but it is not best. It is not the highest platform of activity. Because when we do something that with ourselves as the center, but for Krishna, of course it's not exactly for Krishna, but it's almost for Krishna, or we're doing something that will that's prescribed, that will gradually or quickly will purify us. And purification means becoming detached from anything with ourself in the center and doing or acting with Krishna in the center. So one can't imitate that. One, before one is pure, one can't act as if one is pure. It just can't happen. Or any more than if we take a ball and try to throw it up to the sun or something, or the moon. It just comes back very quickly because it's grounded here. There's no visible string with a ball, but the string of gravity pulls it down back. So similarly, we have our very tangible string of material attachments that keep us within the material world. But gradually, by taking part in religious functions, spiritual functions, gradually we realize that those things performed with ourselves as a center, good as they may be, religious as they may be, are not truly sufficient for the soul's happiness. If we put the soul in the center, our true selves, the eternal part of us in the center, then the activities naturally are based on pleasing Krishna and putting Krishna in the center, actually. But anyway, Sati wanted to go to the sacrifice for her social reasons, quite innocent and childish, etc. But Lord Shiva, he begins to respond. I don't think we read text 15, so did we? Okay. So Maitreya Muni is narrating this to Vidura. So he says, Lord Shiva, the deliverer of the hill Kailash, having thus been addressed by his dear wife, replied smilingly. Although at the same time he remembered the malicious, heart-piercing speeches delivered by Daksha before the guardians of the universal affairs. So he remembered what had happened in the sacrifice and how Daksha had spoken so harshly, nastily, unprovoked in any way against Lord Shiva, who was basically innocent. Who was innocent? So here's Prabhupada's purport. When Lord Shiva heard from his wife about Daksha, that she wanted to go, the psychological effect was that he immediately remembered the strong words spoken against him in the assembly of the guardians of the universe. And remembering those words, he was sorry at heart, although to please his wife, he smiled. So we also have this characteristic. If someone mentions someone who has hurt us, pained us very deeply, just at the mention of their name, even in a different context, we naturally remember the circumstance that caused us pain. And we think about that, and maybe we smile because it's appropriate, but inside there's spears and arrows coursing through our heart. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that a liberated person is always in mental equilibrium in both the stress and the happiness of this material world. Therefore, the question may now be raised, why a liberated personality like Lord Shiva was so unhappy because of the words of Daksha? So it's an interesting question. Why is Lord Shiva remembering Daksha's words? Because he's pure, he's liberated, he's equal in all circumstances. So why is he remembering these words and feeling very deeply pained inside? It's a good, interesting question. Because one, what's the use of being liberated if you still feel the pains of the material world? Because liberated specifically means that you're liberated from what? Pain of the material world, from being entrapped within the material world. So that's the question. The answer to the question is given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Lord Shiva is Atmaram, or situated in complete self-realization. But because he is the incarnation in charge of the material mode of ignorance, Tamagun, he is sometimes affected by the pleasure and pain of the material world. The difference between the pleasure and pain of this material world and that of the spiritual world. So that answered that question. That because he is the guna avatar, or the controller of the mode of ignorance within the material world, sometimes he has to experience the material world. Although, actually speaking, he's liberated. Now here comes a different point. So one has to experience the pain and pleasure of the material world if one is in ignorance. And ignorance basically means ignorant of our identity in relationship with Krishna, because we have a body, we have minds, we have intelligence. But those things, so we usually identify with those things. We think ourselves those things, but actually we're souls. And as long as we identify with mind, intelligence, body, etc. like that, then because those are in the material world, we experience the pleasures and pains of this material world. But if we can just identify ourselves in relationship to Krishna, we see ourselves as Krishna's servants, then we are beyond all that. But yet, now the next point is the difference between the pleasure and pain of this material world and that of the spiritual world. So immediately, interesting point. There's pleasure and pain in the material world. We want to get free from that naturally. We don't so much want to get free from the pleasure of the material world, but we want to get free from the pain of the material world. But the problem is that if you want the pleasure, you get the pain automatically. You can't have one without the other. Like if you take the heads of the coin, you have to take the tails as well. Both sides come together. You can't just take the top part. So one will naturally think freedom from that. That's what we want. But pleasure and pain in the spiritual world too? What is that? So Prabhupada explains that the difference between the pleasure and pain in the material world and pleasure and pain in the spiritual world is that in the spiritual world, the effect is qualitatively absolute. Now, what does that mean? It's qualitatively absolute. there's pleasure and pain, but yet the quality is absolute. That means the quality of that pleasure and pain is transcendental, beyond this material world, having nothing to do with the material world. Prabhupada continues, therefore one may feel sorry in the absolute world, but the manifestation of so-called pain is always full of bliss. So pleasure, pain, all emotions are there. Varieties of emotions of being, attractions, repulsions, everything is there in the spiritual world. But everything brings different varieties of spiritual bliss, unknown in the material world. Now, an example. For instance, once Lord Krishna, in his childhood, was chastised by his mother Yasoda. And Lord Krishna cried. But although he shed tears from his eyes, this is not to be considered a reaction of the mode of ignorance, for the incident was full of transcendental pleasure. When Krishna was playing in so many ways, sometimes it appeared that he caused distress to the gopis, but actually such dealings were full of transcendental bliss. That is the difference between the material and spiritual world. So every dealing in the spiritual world, regardless of what it externally appears like, is a variety of bliss. So that was an explanation of the difference between the happiness and distress of the material world and the spiritual world, and the resolution of why Lord Shiva was experiencing some misery, although he was beyond misery. And that was due to his dealing with the mode of ignorance. So what to speak of our dealing with ignorance? Ignorance means forgetfulness, lack of knowledge. So there's so we're in so much ignorance, lack of knowledge of who we are, and we're acting on that platform of ignorance. So therefore we have to suffer. It's unavoidable. So Lord Shiva replied, "My dear beautiful wife, you have said that one may go to a friend's house without being invited. And this is true, provided a friend does not find fault with the guest because of bodily identification and thereby become angry towards him." So he's beginning to warn Sati of what's going to happen if she goes. Bodily identification means her connection with Lord Shiva. If she goes, Daksha is going to see her, even though his own daughter, he's not going to see her in relationship to himself. He's going to see her in relationship to her husband, Lord Shiva, and criticize her. And that will be very, very painful for her. So this is Lord Shiva's warning. Although the six qualities, education, austerity, wealth, beauty, youth, and heritage, are for the highly elevated, one who is proud of possessing them becomes blind, and thus he loses his good sense and cannot appreciate the glories of great personalities. So here we're getting to the issue. We heard about Sati's attachments that kept her in the material world, and we all have those. We're attached to family, we're attached to social life, and wearing this kind of clothes and showing off and this and that and talking with people day and night. But that type of attachment is nothing compared to what Daksha is being, Lord Shiva is pointing out about Daksha, and it is our curse as well. It is pride. Because if one is proud, whatever good qualities one does have, they are ruined. Because one becomes blind, doesn't see things as they are due to his pride, and then comes envy. And we saw this in the case of Daksha. So we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. Although Daksha was qualified by many material assets, so we always have to be careful of this. Because he was proud of his possessions, And because he was envious, all those qualities were polluted. It is sometimes, therefore, detrimental for a person advancing in spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness to possess material assets. Why? Pride tends to enter the heart. Success, in one sense, is much more dangerous than failure. Because pride causes envy. And then if we're proud, everyone becomes our competitor. And anyone who has something that even remotely resembles what we have, we fear them, that people will think that they have something better than us. This is due to pride. And then we are not that person's well-wisher. We subtly wish them harm, envy. And this is so bad for spiritual life, because then we direct it towards devotees too, and Krishna ultimately, and Radharani. Kunti Devi, while offering prayers to Krishna, addressed him as Akinchana Gochara, Tam Akinchana, Janmaishwarya, Shutashri Bir, Eva Mana Mana Pumam Na Eva Arhati Abhidattam Tam. Vai Tam Akinchana Gochara, that you are the property of those who do not think that they possess anything in this material world. That means they are using everything in Krishna's service, not thinking that it is mine. So one who is easily approached, Krishna as a Akinchana Gochara, one who is easily approached by those who are bereft of all material acquisitions. Material exhaustion is an advantage for advancement in Krishna consciousness. Although if one is conscious of his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can utilize one's material assets, such as great learning and beauty and exalted ancestry, for the service of the Lord. Then such assets become glorious. In other words, unless one is Krishna conscious, all his material possessions are zero. But when this zero is by the side of the Supreme One, it at once increases in value to 10. Unless situated by the sign of the side of the Supreme One, zero is always zero. One may add 100 zeros, but the value will still remain zero. Unless one's material assets are used in Krishna consciousness, they may play havoc and degrade the possessor. So the danger is, again, pride, thinking that it's mine. That's the havoc that it plays. And just see what I have done, who I am, what I've accomplished, my excellence, my opulence. Pride, dangerous. Ambition, dangerous. They're like diseases that spread throughout the consciousness. These are called, in the language of Chaitanya Charitamrita, upasakagan. Nisidaksha kutinati jivahimsan laba puja pratishtadi yata upasakagan. Weeds. The weeds that will actually choke the actual creeper of devotion and inhibit its growth. So pride goeth before the fall. So we have to be careful. And what's the opposite of pride? Humility. Very, very easy to imitate, but hard to possess. We become proud of being humble. Let's see how humble I am. So tricky, false ego. So there are important warnings here. One should not, Lord Shiva continues to tell Sati, go to anyone's house, even on the consideration of his being a relative or a friend, when the man is disturbed in his mind and looks upon the guest with raised eyebrows and angry eyes. In the Vedic culture, one of the most important items is dealing with a guest. when someone comes uninvited, especially, but of course certainly someone who's invited, for someone who's uninvited, Atithi Bhagavan, they're treated so respectfully. In the Christian tradition, actually, in the old Christian tradition, they would also treat guests in a wonderful way. They would think that maybe he's Jesus in disguise, so therefore they would take care of him very carefully. And same in Krishna consciousness, in the Vedic culture, Atithi Bhagavan, they're considered like God. Treat them as you would treat God if he was coming, very, very carefully, make them feel very, very comfortable. And actually, this is the basic principle when someone comes to Krishna's house, the temple. I should treat them very nicely as a servant of the Lord. We try to think of ourselves as a servant of the Lord and the Lord's devotees. So if someone comes, we treat them very nicely and make them feel very welcome. Always make sure they have prasadam, at least a sitting, a place to sit peacefully. Let them feel that we're happy that they have come. But here Lord Shiva is saying, but when you go, what's going to happen is he'll look at you with angry eyes, with raised eyebrows. What are you doing here? And then how will you feel? If one is hurt by the arrows of an enemy, one is not as aggrieved as much as when one is cut by the unkind words of a relative. For such grief continues to rend one's heart day and night. So one who is close to one has the ability to hurt one still more. If one is an enemy and they say something horrible about you, you say, oh, that's my enemy. Of course he's going to say horrible something. And it bounces off. But if a relative or a dear friend says something, it can pierce the heart. My dear white complexion wife, it is clear that of the many daughters of Daksha, you are the pet. Yet, you will not be honored at his house because of your being my wife. Rather, you'll be sorry that you are connected with me. So even if you asked me, Lord Shiva is saying that I should go with you, but I can't go. He's so angry and envious of me. And even if you go alone, just the fact that you're connected with me, you won't be honored. How will you feel? Continues. One who is conducted by false ego and thus always distressed both mentally and sensually cannot tolerate the opulence of self-realized persons. So now he's analyzing, Lord Shiva's analyzing what Daksha's problem actually is. Why is he envious? The envy comes from his pride, that he was so powerful. But when he saw Lord Shiva being more powerful than him, that pride could not tolerate it, so it turned into envy. So one who is conducted by false ego and thus always distressed both mentally and sensually cannot tolerate the opulence of self-realized persons. Being unable to rise to the standard of self-realization, he envies such persons as much as demons envy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we'll read a little of Prabhupada's purport here. And this will be explained more in the next verse. When Daksha entered the arena of Jagya, Lord Shiva was in meditation and might not have seen Daksha enter. So this is explaining why Lord Shiva didn't stand up when Daksha entered. He might have been in meditation and he didn't see him. But Daksha took the opportunity to curse him because Daksha had maintained an envious attitude toward Lord Shiva for a long time. So when you're angry at someone and then they do something that is that you don't like or is inappropriate, you take the opportunity to say, aha, just see what he's done. But the anger is already there. And you're just taking the opportunity to hurt the person. So Daksha had been envious of Lord Shiva for a long time. Those who are actually self-realized see every individual body as the temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His Paramatma future is residing in everyone's body. When one offers respect to the body, it is not to the material body, but to the presence of the Supreme Lord. So this is a philosophical truth that is applied to practical dealings. The practical application of philosophy to practical dealings, what is that called? It's one of the branches of philosophy, actually. You know what it's called? Ethics. The practical application of philosophy to our dealings. Or sadachar in Sanskrit. Ethics. How? Because ultimately there's philosophy, but then you have to apply it. So the philosophy is Ishvara Savabhutanam Riddhishe Arjuna Tishtati, that Krishna is in everyone's heart. So how does that practically apply? Is that practically applied in our daily life? The practical application is respect to everyone, because Krishna is in the heart. And when we're respecting individuals, that's how we are respecting Krishna, because Krishna is there in their hearts. So this was explained very, very carefully by Lord Kapiladev in his instructions in the last canto. And he explains it so strongly that if you worship the deity in the temple, worship the Lord, but don't respect other living entities, because Krishna is in their hearts and you don't respect them, you are the lowest grade of a devotee. You're still a devotee, but of the lowest quality, called a prakriti bhakta, but basically a materialistic devotee. Because on one hand, respect to the Lord, and on the other hand, disrespecting the Lord. So the practical application of the philosophy is of that Krishna is in everyone's heart is to be respectful to every living entity. So Lord Kapiladev explained this very, very thoroughly towards the end of his teachings. When one offers respect to the body, it is not to the material body, but to the presence of the Supreme Lord. Thus, one who is always in meditation upon the Supreme Lord is always offering him obeisances. But since Daksha was not very elevated, he thought that obeisances were offered to the material body. And because Lord Shiva did not offer respect to his material body, Daksha became envious. Such persons, being unable to rise to the standard of self-realized souls like Lord Shiva, are always envious. So that's what happened. Lord Shiva, he was enwrapped in meditation when Daksha entered, and he was paying obeisances, visualizing, seeing, offering respects to the Lord who is in everyone's heart, and therefore he was already fulfilling the obligation of showing respect to everyone, because respect, ultimately, when we give respect to others, it is respect given to the Lord. So Daksha didn't, for him that wasn't sufficient. When you look at me, you shouldn't only respect the Lord, but here I am. You have to show respect to me too. Here I am, I'm this body. So therefore, his lack of self-realization manifested, his lack of knowledge, his ignorance, manifested as envy. So the next verse will explain this still further. My dear young wife, Lord Shiva says, certainly friends and relatives offer mutual greetings by standing up, welcoming one another, and offering obeisances. But those who are elevated to the transcendental platform, being intelligent, offer such respects to the supersoul who is sitting within the body, not to the person who identifies with the body. Prabhupada's purport. It may be argued that since Daksha was the father-in-law of Lord Shiva, it was certainly the duty of Lord Shiva to offer him respect. In answer to that argument, it is explained here that when a learned person stands up or offers obeisances and welcome, he offers respect to the supersoul who is sitting within everyone's heart. It is seen, therefore, amongst Vaishnavas that even when a disciple offers obeisances to his spiritual master, the spiritual master immediately returns the obeisances because they are mutually offered not to the body but to the supersoul. Therefore, the spiritual master also offers respects to the supersoul situated in the body of the disciple. The Lord says in Srimad Bhagavatam that offering respect to his devotee is more valuable than offering respect to him. Devotees do not identify with the body, so offering respect to a Vaishnava means offering respect to Vishnu. So we offer respect to Vishnu by offering respect to the devotee. It is stated also that as a matter of etiquette, as soon as one sees a Vaishnava, one must immediately offer him respect, indicating the supersoul is sitting within. A Vaishnava sees the body as a temple of Vishnu. Since Lord Shiva had already offered respect to the supersoul in Krishna consciousness, offering respect to Daksha, who identified with his body, was already performed. There was no need to offer respect to Daksha's body, for that was not directed by any Vedic injunction. So he's explaining why he didn't stand up, and it was a transcendental reason. Now the next verse, which is the third from last verse in the chapter, is a very important verse that's often quoted. At least the first line is quoted. Sarvam vasudam vasudeva sabditam tadiyate tatapumam apavrita sadveta tasmin bhagavan vasudevo yadhokshajo me namasavadhyate. So, sattvam vishuddham, sudha sattva or vishuddha sattva. It means pure consciousness. Sattvam vishuddham vasudeva sabditam. That pure consciousness, purified, uncontaminated conscious, is called Vasudev consciousness. Yad ijite, because what is revealed there, Pumam Apavrita, the Lord, the Pumam, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is revealed, manifests in pure consciousness or Vasudev consciousness or Sudasattva consciousness. So the, and then sadvecha tasman, in that consciousness, in that pure consciousness, Bhagavan Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vasudeva, is all pervading. He manifests there in that pure consciousness. That's adhokshaja me namasa vidyate. And he was being he's manifest and he's worshipped there with obeisances. So Prabhupada's translation. So Lord Shiva now explains his own consciousness, and by explaining his consciousness, he's explaining what pure consciousness is. So we've heard of different levels of consciousness in this chapter. There was Sati's level of consciousness with those type of material attachments. And there was Daksha's more subtly, materially contaminated consciousness, although having so many powerful qualities, good qualities, still there was pride there, another type of consciousness. And then this other Vasudeva consciousness, or Sudasattva, Vasudeva Sabditam, in which pure consciousness in which the Lord manifests. Now that's being described by Lord Shiva. I am always engaged in offering obeisances to Lord Vasudev in pure Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is always pure consciousness in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Vasudev, is revealed without any covering. So in pure consciousness, just like when the sky is clear, the sun is automatically revealed. So similarly, when our consciousness is pure, Krishna is revealed to that consciousness. So we'll read the sum of the purport. Because it's such an important verse, the purport is very long. We'll see how much we can read. I think we can read it all. But listen very carefully. The living entity, that means the soul, is constitutionally pure. Asango hyam purusha. In the Vedic literature, it is said that the soul is always pure and uncontaminated by material attachment. The identification of the body with the soul is due to misunderstanding. As soon as one is fully Krishna conscious, it is to be understood that one is in his pure original constitutional position. This state of existence is called Shuddha Sattva, which means that it is transcendental to the material qualities. Since this Shuddha Sattva existence is under the direct action of the internal potency, or the spiritual potency of Krishna, the Antaranga Shakti, in this state the activities of material consciousness stop. For example, when iron is put into a fire, it becomes warm, and when red hot, although it is iron, it acts like fire. Similarly, when copper is surcharged with electricity, its action is copper stops. It acts as electricity. Bhagavad Gita 14.26 also confirms that anyone who engages in unadulterated devotional service to the Lord is at once elevated to the position of pure Brahman. Mam chayo vibhacharena bhakti yogena sevate saganan simatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. Therefore, Shuddha Sattva, as described in this verse, is the transcendental position which is technically called Vasudev. Vasudev is also the name of the person from whom Krishna appears. This verse explains that the pure state is called Vasudev because in that state, Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is revealed without any covering. To execute unadulterated devotional service, therefore, one must follow the rules and regulations of devotional service without desire to gain material profit by fruit of activities or mental speculation. In pure devotional service, one simply serves the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a matter of duty, without reason and without being impeded by material conditions. That is called Shuddha Sattva or Vasudeva. Because in that stage, the Supreme Person, Krishna, is revealed in the heart of the devotee. Srila Jiva Goswami has very nicely described this Vasudeva Shuddha Sattva in his Bhagavad Sandarbha. He explains that Astotara Satta 108 is added to the name of the spiritual master to indicate one who is situated in Shuddha Sattva, or in the transcendental state of Vasudeva. The word Vasudeva is also used for other purposes. For example, Vasudeva also means one who is everywhere or all-pervading. This is also called Vasudeva Sabditam. The word Vasudeva may be utilized for different purposes, but whatever purpose we adopt, Vasudeva means the all-pervading or localized Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita 7.19, it is also stated, Vasudeva Savamiti. Factual realization is to understand Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and surrender unto Him. Vasudev is the ground wherein Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is revealed. When one is free from the contamination of material nature and is situated in pure Krishna consciousness or in the Vasudev state, Vasudev, the Supreme Person, is revealed. So the basic idea is that there are different stages. Vasudev consciousness or Shuddha Sattva is pure consciousness. And upon that platform, and that consciousness is a potency of Lord Balaram. And upon that platform, where there is no material adulteration, then if we are qualified, Krishna himself will enter our consciousness. So what is that qualification? It's even more than purity, because purity basically means amal, or the absence of impurity. If we say that a substance is pure, what we're really saying is that there are no impurities there. So pure consciousness, Krishna is indicated by that consciousness. But actually his descent into that consciousness comes about by his mercy. It comes about by his mercy. And what attracts his mercy? Pure love and longing and desire. Tatra loyam api muyam ekalam. Dharma koti sukritir. No? Nalabhyate. Without, this is the price for having Krishna enter the consciousness. On one side purity, on the other side very deep longing and greed for that. So we want, sometimes we'll have greed for Krishna to enter the consciousness, but it is not real spiritual greed, it is just good old mundane greed. We want something for ourselves with our self in the center, because the impurities are not yet removed. So pure consciousness is required. And Krishna consciousness is pure consciousness. So we'll read more of the purport. The action of the internal potency is also described in this verse as apavrita, free from any covering. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his name, his form, his qualities, his paraphernalia, etc., being transcendental, are beyond material nature, it is not possible to understand any one of them with the material senses. When the senses are purified by the discharge of pure devotional service, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakta Uchate, the pure senses can see Krishna without covering. Now, one may inquire that since factually the devotee has the same material existential body, how is it possible that the same materialistic eyes become purified by devotional service? The example, as stated by Lord Chaitanya, is that devotional service cleanses the mirror of the mind. In a clean mirror, one can see one's face very distinctly. Similarly, simply by cleansing the mirror of the mind, one can have a clear conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita 8:8, Abhyasya Yoga Yuktena. By executing one's prescribed duties in devotional service, Chaitasa Nanya Gamina, or simply by hearing about God and chanting about Him, if one's mind is always engaged in chanting and hearing and is not allowed to go elsewhere, one can realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As confirmed by Lord Chaitanya, by the Bhakti Yoga process, beginning from hearing and chanting, one can cleanse the heart and mind, and thus one can clearly see the face of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Shiva said that since his heart was always filled with the conception of Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of the Supreme Lord's presence within his mind and heart, he was always offering obeisances unto that Supreme Godhead. In other words, Lord Shiva is always in trance, samadhi. His samadhi is not under the control of the devotee, it is under the control of Vasudev. For the entire internal energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead acts under his order. Of course, the material energy also acts by his order, but his direct will is specifically executed through the spiritual energy. Thus, by his spiritual energy, he reveals himself. So here's that the other part, that he is the one who reveals himself in pure consciousness. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4:6, Sambhavamyapmamayaya. Atmamaya means internal potency. By his sweet will, he reveals himself by his internal potency, being satisfied by the transcendental loving service of the devotee. So, when the devotee has such love in his service, it's not just the service doing something, I've done so much. It's the devotion. When the devotee has so much longing and devotion and desire to please Krishna, then Krishna can't keep away. He manifests himself within the heart of the devotee. The devotee never commands, "My dear Lord, please come here so that I can see you." It is not the position of the devotee to command the Supreme Personality of Godhead to come before him or to dance before him. There are many so-called devotees who command the Lord to come before them dancing. The Lord, however, is not subject to anyone's command. But if he is satisfied by one's pure devotional activities, he reveals himself. There is a meaningful word in this verse, at Hokchaja, for it indicates that the activities of our material senses will fail to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One cannot realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead simply by the attempt of one's speculative mind. It means that there's nothing, practically speaking, that anyone, how powerful he is, how intelligent he is, there's nothing that one can do to force Krishna to come. But if one desires, he can subdue all the material activities of his senses, and the Lord, by manifesting his spiritual energy, can reveal himself to the pure devotee. So if one gives up separate endeavors to become happy, as if enjoying in the material world, eating this and that, and running out here and there, and trying to get this and that, seeing something wonderful, giving up those type of desires in the material realm and serving Krishna with great, great devotion, and then the Lord reveals himself to the pure devotee. So two sides. One is inhibiting material, selfish, sensuous activities, and on the other side, serving Krishna with great, great devotion. Shraddha Vishishita Priti Sri Murtira Angri Sevana. Serving the Lord with great, great, his lotus feet, with great faith and great priti, great affection, devotion, love. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead reveals himself to the devotee has no other duty than to offer him respectful obeisances. The Absolute Truth reveals himself to the devotee in his form. In his own form he shows himself. Yam shayama sundaram achinta guna sarupam govindam hari purusham tamaham vadami. And such a devotee who is pure in that way, there is not a moment passes where he doesn't see Krishna. Everywhere he looks, he'll see Krishna. This is the great rahasya, secret of devotional service. It gives one the ability to see Krishna at all times, at all places, due to his great love. So Lord Shiva is explaining why, in explaining this about this Sattvam Vasudham Vasudeva Sabditam, he's explaining how he was situated in Vasudeva consciousness, meditation on the Lord, and therefore he didn't stand up. And yet, although his position was so exalted, and it's so rare that someone like this, Daksha became envious of him. So therefore he's saying, don't go. He's not going to treat you properly. When you walk in because of your connection with Misati, he'll stare at you with raised eyebrows, looking at you angrily, and no one can hurt one like one's relatives. Because the closer one is to another, the more capacity is to show affection and give pleasure and also pain. So So he's telling her, he's not saying don't go, but he's telling her what's going to happen. Therefore, you should not see your father. This is text 24. Although he is the giver of your body, because he and his followers are envious of me. Because of his envy, O most worshipful one, he has insulted me with cruel words, although I am innocent and pure. In spite of this instruction, if in spite of this instruction you decide to go, neglecting my words, the future will not be good for you. You are most respectable, and when you are insulted by your relative, this insult will immediately be equal to death. So a very heavy foreboding. And indeed, the next chapter, which we'll read tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we'll read some of it tomorrow, it is entitled Sati Quits Her Body. In other words, Sati dies. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yep.
What Prabhupada makes that samadhi is not under the control of the devotee. It's under the control of Rasa. Interesting, it seems to suggest that at some point your purified consciousness one gives over one's consciousness to the devotee.
The internal energy. But yet, one still remains an individual. But a connection, a permanent, eternal connection is made between the individual soul and the internal energy, because the soul is tiny. Right now, we have given our consciousness over to the external energy, Maya. So this is just the opposite. This is the transference of the shelter that the soul has to take to the internal energy. It's that kind of focus or fixedness of the Lord. And this is samadhi, is basically yogic terminology, but for us it's basically the state of bhava. Not for us, but for in Vaishnava theology. Any other comments, questions? Good comment. Yeah.
Talking about the was exactly the sort of stuff, the stage and development of it, having to go through the Balaram first, and to Krishna to actually.
Yeah, that's in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam.
Well, why is it?
That it's a manifestation of Balaram. That's what I said. So it describes, there's an analogy that's given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that before Krishna came, what son of Devaki was he? What number of son was he? Close.
Eighth
son. So, and who is the seventh? It was Balaram, and there were six sons killed before that. So the six sons have symbolic represent meanings as well. They are also Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Matsarja, and the one I forgot.
Anger.
Maybe, but also another. Maybe there was another son in there. Maybe they were twins, but there was another one. Kam, Krodh, Lobh, which means lust, anger, greed, moha, mada, matsarja, madness, illusion, and envy. So these have to be killed like the sons were killed, removed from the heart, and then one's consciousness is pure. And then the seventh son was Balaram, which is the dham, or the platform, the Vasudeva platform on which Krishna appears. When Krishna comes, he doesn't step his lotus feet upon this material world exactly, but he never leaves the Dham. Everywhere he steps is holy in the spiritual world. So that's the Balaram Sudasattva platform. So after Balaram descends upon in the consciousness, in the form of the Sudasattva platform, then Krishna can come.
Together in the house?
Krishna and Balaram?
Yeah.
If you want them to, they will. If you want them to?
Yeah.
Okay, then they will. But still, you have to do some work. Do some spring cleaning. But it's not Balaram, it's Balaram's potency of the Sudasattva platform, the Vasudev platform, the Dham, Sandini Shakti, as a Sanskrit term also. Okay, let's stop now. So tomorrow night, because we missed one night, tomorrow we'll have class, even though it's Saturday night, and usually we don't, unless there's some difficulty. Is there a program Saturday, tomorrow night? Srimad Bhagavatam ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.